Today's episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare, an online learning platform with over 20,000 classes in business, marketing, technology, design, and more. Learn more at skillshare.com/creative. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm the founder of Accidental Creative and the author of several books, including The Accidental Creative and the brand new book, Herding Tigers, Be the Leader That Creative People Need. When you are doing highly complex creative work, you need some kind of system to help you produce, to help you keep things organized, keep things out of your head, make sure that you know how you're going to get from point A to point B on these highly complex creative projects. Well, for many years, I've been using a system called Getting Things Done. I've done many episodes about some of my favorite techniques and some adaptations of the methodology that I use. I've also had David Allen, the author of Getting Things Done, on the show several times, and he's back again today. He's just co-written a book called Getting Things Done for Teens. It's an adaptation of the Getting Things Done methodology for specifically for today's age. And on today's show, we're going to talk about how we deal with some of the pressure and the dynamics that come with new technologies and new ways of seeing the world and thinking about the world, and how we process those pressures and prevent them from inhibiting our ability to be creative at a moment's notice. So we're going to have that conversation with David Allen in just a minute. Before we dive in, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. As I mentioned before, Skillshare is an online learning platform with over 20,000 classes in business, marketing, technology, design, and more. And you can take classes in social media marketing, data science, web development, you name it. And they've got it. If there's a skill that you want to learn, you're going to find it on Skillshare. So whether you're trying to deepen your professional skill set, you want to start a side hustle, which so many creative pros are doing now, or you just want to explore a new passion, Skillshare is there to keep you learning and thriving. We've talked many times on the show about the importance of lifelong learning. Listen, if you want to continue growing, not just in your career, of course it's important to develop skills if you want to continue developing your career, but just as a human being, to find more satisfaction in life and in work. Developing new skills and new aptitudes is critical to all of those things, and to life satisfaction, and to ensuring that you have a sense of progress in your life, in your work, and in your career. So join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare today with a special offer just for listeners of the Axon Creative Podcast. You can get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. Skillshare is offering the Axon Creative listeners 2 months of unlimited access to over 20,000 classes for just 99 cents. To sign up, go to skillshare.com/creative. Again, that's skillshare.com/creative to start your 2 months now. That's skillshare.com/creative. We thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's great to have back on the show today David Allen. David is the author of the new book. Well, he's the author of originally of Getting Things Done, which is one of my favorite books of all time and radically transformed my life, I guess 15 years ago when I first read it. And he's also the author of a new book called Getting Things Done for Teens, Take Control of Your Life in a Distracting World. David, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Todd, lovely to be speaking with you again.
So you are obviously very aware of the fact that I'm a huge fan of your work, that I've been using GTD for a very long time. We've had conversations about that on this show. My last podcast, David, was about three tips from GTD that have radically transformed my life. So it's funny that, I'm obviously a huge advocate, believe it or not, there are people out there in the world who don't know what GTD is. And I can't believe that's the case. But for those who are uninitiated, could you just describe what is Getting Things Done, sort of as briefly as you can, and then we'll dive into some of the details. But what is it, and what is it designed to do?
Sure. Well, it's a set of best practices that I uncovered, over the last three decades that allow you to create more space in your head, more room to do creative work, to be strategic, to be loving, to be present, to be innovative, all those golden goodies in life that you don't need time for, but you need room. You can't be creative if you're too distracted or have too many open loops that are nagging and gnawing at you. And so I just discovered, how do I get my head clear and be in this world but not of it, and how to do that. And it's a fairly simple and very straightforward common sense set of behaviors, but you're not born doing them. First of all, you have to capture anything that's potentially meaningful to you. that you can't finish the moment you're thinking of it. You need to capture that, write it down, park some placeholder for that in some bucket you trust. Then you need to get that bucket empty sooner than later by deciding, is this thing I captured, is that something to move on or not? If it's not, you toss it, tickle it for later review, or file it. And if it is something to move on, then two key questions you need to clarify, or that clarify what these things really are, is what outcome are you committed to finish about this, and what's the very next action you need to take? Right. So outcome and action become sort of the thought process that you need to apply to the stuff that you've captured that has your attention. Then you need to park the results in some trusted system. If you decided, hey, mom's birthday, yeah, outcome, I'm going to celebrate mom's birthday, great, next action, call my sister, see what she thinks about the party, great. If you can't call your sister right then, you need to park a reminder somewhere that you'll see when you have a phone in time, so that you're reminded to call your sister. And basically building a trusted external brain that then is holding, keeping track of all the cleared commitments and actions that you need to be reminded of at any point in time. Then you need to just make sure you use the system. And you know, when you have time and a phone, you look at your list of six calls to make, or you're going out for errands, look at the list of eight errands you need to run. Right? Duh. But that's what you need to do to review the system, so that then you're making trusted choices about what you do. That's the fifth step, which is, how do I engage right now? Where do I put my attention in my activities? So it's a very simple capture, clarify, organize, reflect, and engage process, which is how you get your kitchen under control, how you get your company under control, it's how you get your consciousness under control. So it's a very simple process, but most people don't do that. They do those behaviors at somewhat random moments, but inconsistently, right, and not completely. And that, it's transformational when you do it, you know, completely.
It is. And that's, I think the completely part of it is the hardest part, right? Because some of it, like you said, most of us have some, any professional has some system for organizing their work of some sort, right? But the problem is, sure, I realized when I read Getting Things Done, my biggest problem, David, was I would be stressed about the 15 projects I had to do, but I had no idea what the next action was on any of those projects. I just knew, right, I needed to design this thing. Well, what does that even mean? It doesn't mean, so I'm stressed about, I have to design this thing, but really the very next thing I need to do is I need to have a clarifying conversation with somebody on my team about what that thing, what is the next action, right, that we need to take. That's the very next thing I need to do. But I was just walking around stressed all the time because I didn't know what the very next thing I needed to do was, which is at the very beginning of the process. But I meet so many people, David, who are in that situation. They have all of these inboxes in their life, all of these places that information's coming in. They have all these projects they're accountable for, but they have no clue what they need to do about them next. And so what do? They just stew, or they work frantically, but not strategically on what they're doing.
And they're using their head as their office, and your head's a crappy office.
Yes.
So, you know, your brain did not evolve to remember, remind, prioritize, or manage relationships between more than four things. Mm. And that's cognitive science validated now, that your, yes, head, it just wasn't designed for that. It does a very bad job. So, you know, the way I say that is, your head's for having ideas, but not for hanging on to them.
Right.
So that's, and all that stuff, that's why people stew. As a matter of fact, any one project you haven't decided the next action on and you're not yet appropriately engaged with will color your whole world gray.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you inspired me to do this, to practice this. And I've been carrying an index card in my pocket for the last 15 years. Anytime something comes up, I write it down. Even like if you read the list of things I write down every day, they seem completely disconnected. It would look like the ramblings of a lunatic, right? But the reason I do it is because of you, because you said, don't keep things in your head. If you have an idea that you're like, oh, I need to remember that later, write it down. Right. Don't wait till later to do it. And so it's been super helpful. So I, you know, obviously in the 15 years or 60, wow, it was what, 2001 when Getting Things Done was originally published,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah.
So in the 17 years since, that's weird to say, I'm sure it's weird to hear for you. A lot, yeah, of things have changed, right? I mean, back then we did memos, office memos, right? We had phones that existed on the wall, or like office landline phones. And we didn't have these little computers we carried around in our pocket. So much has changed just in the world of the average adult since then. But when I think about teens and what they're dealing with today, you know, we didn't have to deal with all of these pressures that they're dealing with. When I was growing up, when we went home, home was a respite from all of the social pressure, all of the, you know, the expectations, all of that. But now there is no break for teenagers. So this,
by the way, Todd, I just met a woman who has a son who's 11 years old. She looked at his phone. He has 500 WhatsApp messages on it.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, 500. And she said, you know, he's cool enough to go, eh, I don't pay much attention to that. And he does his homework. So, but that may be rare.
Well, it is rare. And even if he says, eh, and he does his homework, it's still, the social expectation is still weighing on him, I'm sure, mm-hmm. right? I wonder what's in there. I wonder if that person's waiting for me to get back to them. And, you know, it is a different age that we live in where we are perpetually connected via technology to anybody who wants to determine the priority of our next 5 minutes of our life, right? So, sure. You know, you adapted this book, Getting Things Done for Teens. It's funny because I was reading through this and I'm thinking, oh, I have two teenage boys. I need them to read this book. But as I started reading through it, I thought, oh, I need this. Like, I need to go back through this myself, even as a practitioner, because I realize there's so many things in this book that you've changed and adapted for the modern age, and it applies not just to teens, but also to adults who are professionals. So what's the deal with the adaptation? Why did you feel the need to do this? And what are some of the unique things that have changed in how you've thought about GTD for teens and specifically adapting it for this modern age that we live in?
Well, those are two big questions. Let me deal with the second one first. Great. As you know, I wrote a new edition to Getting Things Done in 2015. Yes. And the methodology didn't change. Everything I just said in our beginning conversation was true back then and is true now. So the essence of the methodology didn't change. What changed is the breadth of audience that is crying out for this. Mm. You know, in 2001, the target audience were the fast track professionals, you know, folks like you that were, you know, just being, they were the first, you were the first to get hit with the tsunami of email, et cetera.
Right.
And how fast things were changing, you know, that changed your priorities and how to think about things and recalibrate. So that was the target audience was back then. And so the first edition of the book kind of had that as a focus in terms of the case studies of it, in terms of the examples, et cetera. I even knew back then that this worked for students, it worked for kids, it worked for clergy, it worked for stay-at-home dads, it worked for anybody. But that was the target sort of the writing of this to begin with. And then the new edition, what happened in those 15 years was really my the more subtle awareness of how powerful this methodology was and maybe some more up-to-date ways of expressing it. So it didn't really change so much. And the technology, all technology has done is speed things up. Yes. You know, it really hasn't and added volume to it. So they didn't really change the basic principle that you needed to apply. So even if you had 300 emails a day, there's no difference with any one of those emails and somebody stopping you in the hall and say, hey, Todd, could you handle this? You know, same thing, still input, even if it showed up as a piece of mail in your physical mailbox. It's all just input. You're just getting a lot more and you're having to get really fast to get through it and to make sure you're not letting things lie fallow that might be useful and potential in there. And so that's what's different is, you know, when I wrote the new edition, I some of the vocabulary I changed, it's subtle. Mm-hmm. But for instance, in the first book, I said collect, which is the first step. I changed that to capture. The reason is collect is kind of a passive going around and pick up things you've already created and just left open that you need to gather together. But capture, well, come on, especially in your field, you know, Todd, come on, in the creative field, a lot of it is sit down and think about this thing and start capturing all the things that show up when you think about it. Yes. So, you know, it almost needs to include, you know, creative brainstorming as well as just gathering stuff you've already created. So some of the vocabulary changed that then made it more encompassing to, you know, to everyone's lifestyle, I think.
Right.
So
I do feel like, so we have a teenage son who is currently learning to drive, which is a whole different kind of experience, right? But when we're in a parking lot, and we tell him, okay, here's how you do it, hands at 10 and 2 and all of that. I mean, he's perfectly fine. But it kind of feels like most of us are that kid learning how to drive in the parking lot. And then all of a sudden, we're just thrown onto an interstate highway and told, okay, figure it out. That, you know, it feels like the gap between where we were 17 years ago and where we are now is kind of like that kid just being thrown on the highway and being told, okay, learn to deal with all of this stuff that's coming your way. As you said, we haven't, I think our biology hasn't adapted adapted to our technology. You know, we are not, I think it's getting worse. And we think that algorithms are going to make it better. It's not, because expectations are only going up, right? So the capture piece, I think, is really relevant, because there are so many ideas that come across the field of vision of the average creative on a daily basis. And so many next actions and other things that have to happen. The problem is, because it's so frictionless for us to communicate, there are more of those things than we can deal with. So how do we begin to think about and prioritize what we should be acting on versus what we need to just let go of? Do you have any tips or ideas for that?
Yeah, well, let's reduce it to the basics of this. First of all, you need a clear head. Mm-hmm. And most people's head is far from clear, simply because they haven't implemented this methodology. When you do, and you have much more clear space in your head, it's much easier to see a longer horizon, much easier to see things. I've coached hundreds of senior executives over the last years, and I've never had any one of them who actually wound up getting all their stuff out of their head and looking at their 65 projects and not have them by themselves re-understand their priorities. I didn't have to say anything about priorities. They just needed a clear head, and they needed to take a look in a more objective way, as opposed to having this stuff bang around in the kitchen of their brain, yeah. You know, and having it externalized made it a whole lot easier for them to see that. That said, as you know, and we talk about this even in the book for teams, there's 6 horizons or levels of commitments you have. And so you might need to revisit those. Where are you going in your life? Why are you on the planet? What goals do you have? You know, and what are all the things you need to maintain? You know, oh, I need to maintain my relationships. I need to maintain my sports. I need to maintain my after-school job. I need to maintain, you know, come on, team. I'm sure your kids got a lot of stuff they need to maintain. So there's another level of commitment. And then they have all the projects they need to do about that. Mm-hmm. You know, wow, I want to learn to be a programmer. Wow, I want to learn to ride horses. Wow, I want to, whatever those things are, those are projects. Yes. And then you have all the action steps that they need to focus on as well. What are the emails they need to send then? Who do they need to talk to next about learning to ride horses? Where do they need to go? You know, what website might they want to surf in order to see how to start to become a programmer? Mm. You know, so kids are no different than anybody else. They just have a lot of that. And, you know, to the point of what we're talking about here, it's as much the stress of opportunity as the stress of overwhelm.
Yes,
and a lot of the overwhelm is coming from the opportunities.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, that's why in a crisis you relax, because it limits all your opportunities.
it's so true. You're exactly right. You know, some of the most clear-minded moments I have is when the tsunami is so great that I can only focus on a couple of things, and I almost laugh. Like, okay, it's so bad right now that yeah. You know, all I can do is this. So people need to read Getting Things Done. If you haven't. Listen, and I think you would be the first to admit, David, that even if you pull some key principles from it, and you don't apply it perfectly, but you at least use some of these key things to organize, you're going to experience benefit regardless of whether you do the whole thing. But if you don't do the whole thing, there are always going to be holes in the bucket, as you say, right? And things are going to be leaking out. You're always going to wonder. But I encourage people, just listen, pick up the book. If you have a teenager, I am buying copies for both of my teenagers, and I'm going to be giving away many copies. But David, I want to talk.
By the way, to your point, anybody who hasn't read the Getting Things Done, if they just get Getting Things Done for Teens, to your point, there's stuff in here that'll give you the whole game, because the whole game is really in here. It's
absolutely.
Just framed in a much simpler and kind of realistic way for younger people.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, like there's part of a lab in the back that says, hey, kids, ever think about unpacking and repacking on a weekly basis? What's in your pack? You know, hey, come on every Friday afternoon. Why don't you dump out everything in your pack and then repack it for the weekend?
Yes.
And on Sunday night, how about you unpack it and then repack it for your week? I mean, it's the same thing, the same methodology. It's just, you know, framed in a kind of a fun, you know, and a more lighthearted way, I think. And
well, that is good advice for anyone, frankly. You know, I think professionals should be doing that. Listen, we're right now, literally today, moving, David. I'm sitting in my home office in our new house, and I am surprised at how much crap I have accumulated that I don't need. And I'm like, why is this even in my office? It's crazy. But, you know, but we're moving it. And it's, you know, it's because I haven't been fully diligent over time about saying, does this belong or does it not belong? Right? Is this just getting in the way?
Well, I'm such a radical about that. Even if I'm only one night in a hotel, I unpack everything. because it just gets nuts if I try to reach something down in the bottom of my suitcase to find it. But now that now I can't repack the suitcase, you know, it's just crazy.
Absolutely.
So I just learned that. And now living in Amsterdam, of course, we all have packs because we all ride bikes. Right. Yes. So I literally, whenever I walk into my little office here at home, I take my pack and unpack everything in it. And the only thing I leave in there is dental floss, but I have dental floss in every pack. Just in case, you know, but otherwise, yeah, man, it's amazing. You know, crap self-generates. It doesn't self-destruct.
Yeah, that's so true. I'm going to print that out and put it on the wall of my office. Actually, that's a good line.
Well, things change their meaning over time. You know, everything in the center drawer of your desk belonged there at one point.
Yeah,
it's just
that's right.
Time passed, and so the ballpoint refills do not fit your new ballpoint. You know, but they're still in there, right?
Yeah,
so
that's right.
Time passed, and that changes things. That's why organizing is a constant event. It's not a one-time thing.
Yeah, or things that were sentimental to you at one point. Like, so that's why I'm realizing with my office, I have all kinds of like gifts, speaker gifts and other things that really meant something to me at one point, but now they've lost their meaning, but they're still around, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I need to probably go through and I need to use this as an opportunity to clean up. So David, you mentioned Amsterdam, and I want to just ask one more question of you. Listen, okay, again, you need to read the book. You know, you need to check this out. If you have teens, or even if you don't, read the teen version first, and it'll definitely give you a good sense of the methodology. And it's applicable to anybody, not just teens, right? So, and I learned a ton just from reading through this. But you moved to Amsterdam. I know that that's part of, you're a guy who continues to build and grow and adapt. And I know when we had some conversations for your podcast a couple of years ago around my book, Die Empty, you had mentioned that you had this vision for kind of where you wanted to go and what you wanted to do. And, you know, I would just love to hear, what is your vision for your work and what is your vision for where GTD goes over the next handful of years?
Well, we've really re-understood our purpose as creating a world where there are no problems, only projects. Mm. So, you know, I'm willing to go wherever there's an audience interested in hearing that message and how to do it. And so it's a global methodology. I'm a global person. No better place on the planet, as far as I'm concerned, than to be in Amsterdam to do that. I mean, it's much more the center of the world than Santa Barbara was. People say, why would you move from Santa Barbara to Amsterdam? I say, well, I got about 25 reasons, actually. I mean, we love Santa Barbara, the U.S. too, but, you know, the Netherlands is a fabulous place. We love the Dutch. A whole lot of the DNA of America started a few blocks from where I'm sitting right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
In terms of the Enlightenment, you know.
Yes.
All the founding fathers actually, you know, took all their messages and they began to preach the gospel that was actually developed in Amsterdam in the 1600s, you know, Erasmus to John Locke to, you know, all those other people. And of course, Manhattan was New Amsterdam. So it was fascinating because I was an American intellectual history major in my, you know, my academic career. And I loved, you know, the DNA of America was unique and wonderful and brilliant. I had no idea that it had its roots right here. Mm. So it wasn't like I was deserting something by moving here. It's more like I came back to the source.
Yeah.
Group cooperation for individual economic gain was the DNA of this country, and it still is. Because there was no feudal society here because there was no land. Yeah. And monarchy and church built their power on land. Well, the Dutch have a wonderful saying, God created the world and the Dutch created Holland. Because but you can't build a dike by yourself. So they had to have group cooperation, but then everybody who built it and contributed to it got equal shares. And that's why this was the first stock market in the world. It was the first place that a woman in 1620 could move in from the countryside by herself and get a job. Mm-hmm. I mean, it still has that kind of DNA. So you kind of like anything goes here as long as it doesn't disturb sort of the economic stability of the country. So it's fascinating. And that got translated to the U.S. And of course, the U.S. in our naivete thought, well, let's just export this to the world. And the world going,
not so much. Yeah.
Not so much.
that's something you grow. It's not something you build. Right. And that's, I think, the challenge is like with any good thing in life, it's you don't build them, you grow them. And so it takes time. You can't just impose something. You can't come in and just build something on somebody else's land. No, it doesn't work that way. So
it's
tricky.
Yeah.
Well, David Allen is the author, Getting Things Done for Teens, Take Control of Your Life in the Distracting World. David, thanks so much for taking your time to be with us today.
Todd, it's been really wonderful to talk to you again. Thanks.
And again, as always, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or get every episode delivered by email at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. See you next time.